It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, everybody, on this January 2nd, 2020. Welcome to the show. Great, great show for you guys today. One that I've never done. I've never been able to encompass a topic like this, one that covers such a large span of time, but one that I'm really looking forward to because it gives me a chance to go back and reflect on what this decade provided to us from a professional wrestling standpoint. And looking back, man, there are going to be some things that you guys forgot about, as I did. I took a lot of other people's lists that they had out there, and I didn't just copy verbatim, but I did use other people's ideas and other people's top lists as references to be able to put my own list together. And I think that you guys will enjoy this because it's a step back in time, as this wrestling nostalgia show always is. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun with this. There is a lot to cover. I'm not going to go over everything. There will be things I miss. And this is not so much of a top 10 list as it really is just a look back at 10 different points in time in the last 10 years that I think were monumental in their own right. And I tried to choose different ones that meant different things at the time, and looking back, still hold water in today's environment and change the way that WWE presented wrestling. Some of these moments are so monumental that we're still discussing them today and how it affects today's current product. There are just so many good things, and I know, once I give you guys these top 10, or I shouldn't say top 10, these 10 different items, this list of 10 monumental events that happened in the last 10 years, I know I will leave things off and I will get people tweeting at me saying, how could you forget this and this and this and this? Well, I don't want my list being 100 items long. And you could, this is a very objective list, right? So you may agree, you may disagree, but the fact of the matter is that you can make an argument for this. The items that I'm going to give you guys, you can make an argument that this was a big, and these were big turning points in the business. So before we get going, which, trust me, there's lots of good things from, and going to give you hints, from pipe bombs to streaks to revolutions. Hope I gave you guys some hints. This was a crazy decade, and imagine what 2030 is going to be when we look back at the 20s. Anyway, guys, welcome to the show, and you guys can follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. You can also hit me up on Instagram, which is WWE Podcast as well, or the website, which, you guessed it, is WWEPodcast.com, and video is coming. I'm going to announce that until it actually happens. Video is on the way for the free feed, for my website, for Patreon at patreon.com/WWEPodcast, where, by the way, you get all these shows ad-free. Come on the show, and lots of other cool perks, shout-outs, video shout-outs on my Twitter feed, and more. So what I'm going to probably do once I get video up and running is do exclusive videos just for that feed on Patreon, and then do free videos occasionally during the week with my website and my normal Apple podcast feed. So just a little bit of a heads up on what's going to be coming down the line, as well as trying to get more people on the show. What I mean by that is not necessarily co-hosts, although I do like to mix it up from time to time, but also wrestlers, actual wrestlers, whether they're on the independent scene or if I can try to get somebody from WWE. It is on my radar, getting actual wrestlers from WWE. I've had people ask me that. it's like, you know, it takes an act of Congress to make it happen, because there's a lot of red tape you have to go through. A lot of times they want a significant amount of money, even for a short period of time. A lot of barriers, right? So actual wrestlers from WWE may be harder to get than, you know, independents and things like that. But even those on the independent scene, I think, have a lot of value to add to a conversation about wrestling, because, yeah, they may not be in the big leagues, as WWE likes to call themselves, but they still have experience. More experience than 98% of us listening. And wrestling is wrestling. And yes, it's not WWE's brand of wrestling, but I think even those on the independent scene could add a lot of value and conversation to this show. So I'm going to be working on that in the coming year. I've made New Year's resolutions for this show, if you can tell. Also being more active on Twitter, and trying to live watch the pay-per-view so I can interact immediately with you guys. It's not easy for me to do. I just, my schedule at home is just crazy with you know, a little one and everything else, and to watch it live is not easy. But I'm going to be trying to do all those things in the next year. So there are my New Year's resolutions for this show. So again, guys, a little bit of a schedule. A reminder, the AEW and NXT reviews should be coming out later tonight or even tomorrow, just so you know, those of you that are waiting on that, as well as the weekend review with Ashley coming up this weekend, probably dropping on Saturday, so you'll be able to hear us discuss everything that's going on as we reach the halfway point to the Royal Rumble, and there's certainly a lot to get to. Ashley and I certainly have good chemistry, I think at least, and, you know, She brings out some good conversation, brings out good points, and I know you guys love her, and she'll be back this weekend. All right, well, let's not delay this any further. Let's just get to the first item I have on this list. And again, this is not a 10-to-1 list or 1-to-10 list. There's no real order. You really could make a case for all of these being on different levels and different rankings in a top 10, or maybe you wouldn't put them at all on your list. But I think we need to get to one of the biggest moments in the last 10 years, and this is one that is extremely recent, and I understand that. I'm not saying it's the most significant, and it's not because, well, we feel like the most significant things are the ones that happen the most recent because they're the most fresh in our minds. I'm aware of that alteration of memory. Those memories that are the most recent are the most vivid, typically, and the ones that you magnify. But in this case, you could argue it's a top 10, maybe number 9 or 10 on some people's lists, but it's Kofi Kingston winning the WWE Championship. And I think that's significant because Kofi Kingston winning was something that came out of left field for most people. I don't think anybody predicted Kofi Kingston winning the WWE Championship at the beginning of 2019. I mean, you didn't see it coming, and that was part of the magic. And it really took just one injury by Mustafa Ali, who's really the unsung hero of this entire run, that allowed this opportunity for Kofi to present itself, taking Mustafa Ali's, or just Ali, excuse me, they've chopped the name, just Kofi Kingston took Ali's spot in the Elimination Chamber and went on to have an extraordinary performance against the heel Daniel Bryan, champion at that time, nearly winning the thing, and just set the world ablaze with the Kofi Kingston movement. And while Kevin Owens was originally scheduled to be the opponent for Daniel Bryan, it turned into Kofi Kingston, and it just caught fire. I mean, the next day people were clamoring for another, they want to see it again, and credit to Bryan too. It doesn't hurt that Daniel Bryan was his dancing partner in this whole thing, and it just became this organic movement for Kofi. I was never, as you guys know, was never a proponent of Kofi Kingston winning. He never felt like a true WWE champion. And I'll get to that in a minute for those that haven't heard my thoughts on that. And you're probably like, what the hell? What are you talking about? He deserves it. Okay, well, Kofi Kingston was in the WWE for 11 years. We know the story. He was the good soldier. He was great to work with, easy to get along with backstage. Was in that mid to upper tier card for the majority of his career. Caught fire with the New Day. started out with that fake Jamaican accent. We all know the story of Kofi Kingston as it's been repeated over and over, and then Vince McMahon throws a bunch of obstacles in his way every SmackDown on the way to the WrestleMania pay-per-view. And Kofi overcomes them all, climbs that mountain, and Vince McMahon takes us on a ride and gets us to the top. Kofi holds it for 6 months and then loses in 9 seconds to Brock Lesnar. LMAO, or crying laughing face, is what I would, if I was texting somebody about this, it would be LOL, LMAOOO with a crying face. That's a laughing crying face. That's how I would feel about it. And, you know, look, Here's my deal with Kofi, and I want to just say this up front, because I've actually had people put in a review that I'm it's privilege, white privilege. What I have no idea what white privilege has anything to do, which I don't even think exists, by the way. And you may say, well, that's because you're white. Well, no, but that's a whole other topic. I may even do a whole other podcast on something like that, right? Get people fired up. And, anyway, but even if white privilege does exist, then what does that have to do with my opinion of the run of Kofi Kingston? People like to bring in skin color. It's such an easy target. It's such an easy, lazy analysis. It's a lazy attack on somebody to just point to, you're a racist. It's lazy. It just has no backing, right? I was a Kofi Kingston proponent of in the ring forever, for his entire career. I had no issue with him in the ring. I had nothing. I have had not said a bad word about Kofi Kingston, probably isn't in his entire career. Up until he won the WWE Championship, he just never felt like he was a champion. And it had zero to do with his skin color. Zero. He could be pink or purple or yellow or green. I don't care. I don't give a damn. It just felt like a mid-carder carrying the belt that he didn't really deserve. And you could say, he worked for 11 years. He deserves it. Well, there are a lot of guys that work longer and harder than him that have never held the championship and don't deserve to. And that's okay. That's okay. Not everybody needs to hold that belt just because they're there a long time. That doesn't automatically qualify you to be the top guy just because you have a long-standing relationship with a company. It should afford you more opportunities. That's certainly the case, and absolutely. But the fact of the matter is, Kofi as a character never, ever, ever to me reached the WWE Championship level. Never. He felt like a champion that was just, again, holding the belt, keeping it warm for somebody that actually was of the caliber to hold it. And I'm not trying to disrespect Kofi. I think he's an amazing performer. His character never caught with me. You know why? I think the biggest part was I was willing to give it a chance at WrestleMania when he won this year. And it was such a feel-good moment. Oh, what a great feel-good moment. He brought his kids in the ring. Anyway, before I start ranting on that, I was willing to give it a chance. But the problem is, during the entire 6 months, he was still throwing pancakes, acting like a sophomore in high school, like some just goofball in the New Day. And you may say, oh, why would you change your act? Why would you fix something that's not broke? Well, because the WWE championship itself deserves more respect than somebody parading around with pancakes. Again, those of you listening are probably saying, it's a skin color, it's just because he's black. It has nothing to do with that. Okay, let's grow up, all right? Let's not be lazy in our attacks on people of everybody just pointing to racist, bigot, racist. It's so lazy, and it has nothing to do with it. It's purely on a wrestling character standpoint that Kofi Kingston had no business being WWE champion as long as he did. He never felt that way. The championship got forgotten for 6 months. You don't believe me? You don't believe me that it got lost for 6 months? Go back and watch Kofi Kingston's run on SmackDown over those 6 months, from April until October, when Brock Lesnar rightfully took it away from Kofi Kingston in 9 seconds. He got really misplaced on the show. If you're the champion, you got misplaced. Why? Because you got overshadowed by Roman Reigns' whodunit. You got overshadowed by other storylines that were apparently bigger than you as WWE champion. Go back and look. And yes, he closed out shows sometimes, and occasionally he would be the main focus of the show. Occasionally, more often than not, who stole the thunder? Roman Reigns. So that's my thoughts on that. But it was a big moment. It was a big moment because it was kind of like the Yes Movement Part 2 with Daniel Bryan winning at WrestleMania 30. And I had no issues with that either. But with Daniel Bryan winning at 30, that to me was probably one of the biggest grassroots movements of all time in professional wrestling. And that's actually my next item as I get to the second piece of this is Daniel Bryan winning at WrestleMania 30. And again, one of the biggest illustrations that the power that the crowd can have on who they want as champion, despite what Vince McMahon may want, is Daniel Bryan. I mean, we know the story. He came in from the independent scene and was put in NXT's joke at the time, which is he was a joke of being the Miz being his pro, which is hilarious to think about now, and gets fired after he joined the Nexus and strangled Justin Roberts with his own tie, and then gets rehired, and then ends up, I remember he faced Sheamus at WrestleMania 28 and lost in like 11 seconds after a brogue kick, and just so many things led to Daniel Bryan and the organic love that the fans had for him. Easy guy to like. Didn't feel like a corporately created a performer. He felt like a guy that you could relate to and you'd want to have a beer with, and was just the everyman, and you know, aka the opposite of Roman Reigns, and just the crowd began to love him. So let me give you guys a little bit of audio from WrestleMania 30. As don't forget, earlier in the night, he had to face Triple H, and if he won, he would make himself in a three-way in the main event of Batista and Randy Orton. So let's just take a listen, and let's remind ourselves of what happened here in New Orleans. Just a little bit of a reminder there, just how big that moment was. And going back and watching it, the sea of people chanting yes, I mean, there's not a person sitting down. Not a single person sitting down. It is quite a sight to see. And it was just gorgeous. I mean, no other way to put it. It was a magnificent, huge moment that took place at WrestleMania 30. And changed the course of WWE forever, because I think that not only was that a successful run for Bryan that ended up, you know, getting cut short because of an injury, only to lead to a comeback, and ultimately I think turned the fans against Roman Reigns, but also conditioned the audience to believe that they can direct who they want to push and not who the company and Vince feels like he should push, because he feels that he knows better than the audience. So this, I think, was really the ignition or the start of the fans versus Vince McMahon, because the fans realized what power they had in their hands now. The fans realized, guys, like, look what we did. And this was all the fans, all of the fans are responsible for this. They are the reason Daniel Bryan got to where he was. And you could say, oh, the fans have always held the keys. You know, they're always the ones who decide who gets pushed. Nonsense. I mean, it's just, you would say that, and to some degree, I would agree with you, but the thing is that Vince McMahon has just had this incessant need to push back against fans and say that, no, this is going to be your top guy. I mean, again, look at Exhibit A, Roman Reigns, right? It's just this war of attrition with Roman and Vince versus the fans. And to some degree, Vince McMahon has gotten where he wants to be with Roman, not to this level of success he's wanted, but we will see, as you guys know, what happens when he faces The Fiend or someone beyond Baron Corbin, if all of this success is indeed authentic. But anyway, having that happen at WrestleMania 30, huge moment. Moving on to the next item, number three, and again, this is not in any particular order, was the Women's Evolution pay-per-view. And this was a big deal, right? It's the first all-women's pay-per-view in WWE history. And this really began, if you want to trace this women's revolution back, it started because of social media. And this started on February 23rd. It was the Bella Twins facing Paige and Emma in a match on Raw. It lasted less than a minute, and it really kickstarted the hashtag Give Divas a Chance. And the Divas Championship was still unfortunately in place, which was an awful championship. Awful. It's like, who wants to be the biggest drama queen? That's really what the championship meant. Didn't have a whole lot of value. It was a butterfly championship. I think the only one to really add any prestige to that was AJ Lee. She felt like, you know, she was a true champion. And yes, Paige won the Divas Championship on her first Raw debut. We all know that story. But the Divas Championship, for all intents and purposes, was just a watered-down drama queen championship of the Penny women facing each other. And yeah, the Bra and Panties matches were not happening, but the women were really still being positioned as a glorified bathroom break. I mean, that's just what they were. There's no getting around that they were. So that started in 2015 in February, and 5 years later, here we are. And look where we've come. And the Evolution pay-per-view was amazing. That pay-per-view never would have taken place had that hashtag not caught fire. And, really sparked the women of WWE to do a ton of crazy firsts. As WWE said, the first women's Money in the Bank ladder match, the first women's Royal Rumble, the first women's Hell in a Cell, and then the first women's TLC match, and ultimately the first women's main event of WrestleMania, right? They love saying the first. And by God, it's all about making history. That's the one drawback to this whole thing, I think, is that the competitors in their promos were more concerned about making history than winning a match. I took issue with that because the first and foremost, you should be here to win. If I'm supposed to believe in your character, I need to know that you care about winning and not just stealing the show like Dolph Ziggler or getting into This Is Awesome chant. I need to know that you care about winning so I can get behind you when you're in a match. And so I think a lot of that got lost in making history. How many times do we hear that with Sasha versus Charlotte in the first women's Hell in a Cell match? It's all about making history. Here's the thing. We know it's making history. We have the announcers to tell us that. It's not for you to transparently tell me that it's about making history, right? Does anybody else get their stomach turned by this? It's just very heavy-handed. I'm not a fan. But I'm a fan of the women's movement. It has certainly shaken things up and I think made the male competitors in WWE more competitive, that they aren't just going to be given and afforded a better spot because of their gender now, and that they need to earn it. And they have the women who are just as hungry, if not more hungry than the men are, and put on great matches. And the Evolution pay-per-view was a huge, I think it was one of the best pay-per-views of the entire year. I remember how awesome that pay-per-view was. Toni Storm, I remember being a standout in that match or in that show. And it was awesome to see. And it was a signal that the women are here. And I don't know why there hasn't been another Evolution pay-per-view. It's a little bit puzzling. I would have liked to have seen another women's pay-per-view, but maybe I'm sure we will. And maybe they just don't feel like they have a strong enough roster right now with Ronda Rousey down. And several others, and that the storylines don't feel as hot, that they can't provide another pay-per-view of that level. But I remember I loved, I raved about the reviews on that pay-per-view of Evolution. If you haven't seen it, you need to. I also could have done without Stephanie McMahon coming out to, like, you know, stand with all the women as if this is like, you know, a high school drama. And we all come out at the end of the show and bow like, hey, thanks for, you know, thanks for being entertained. It's, God, it makes me want to vomit. It takes everything away. But nonetheless, a great pay-per-view and one that I think was a turning point and really a sign of the times that an all-women's pay-per-view could actually stand up and live up to the expectations, and it did. All right, the next thing that I think we need to talk about is the streak ending and Undertaker losing to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30. This was a moment that I don't think anybody would ever believe that they would see in their lifetime. It was shocking. It was really unbelievable to watch. And rather than me describe it, I'm just going to give you some damn audio. I know you guys love the audio. I do too. So let's take a listen and we can live this moment again. And we'll come right back with some analysis.
All right, Brock Lesnar countered. Brock Lesnar countered. Lesnar countered. He's got Undertaker up in his shoulders again.
Not again.
Going for a triple. A third F5 to the Undertaker. Brock Lesnar into the cover. Hooks the leg. The streak is over.
That was just, I mean, watching that back still makes me, it's still shocking. It's still shocking. Again, to go 21-0 was something that you get that far, and Undertaker, you know, so far in his career that you think there's just no chance. There is no chance that they're ever going to have the Undertaker lose his streak. And Jim Ross came up with a proposition of, if the streak's going to end, here's how you do it. You have the Undertaker declare that if he ever loses at WrestleMania and someone breaks his streak, that he will retire. That would create so much buzz and interest of, well, he has to lose at some time. Who's going to be the one to beat him? I think that's a brilliant, brilliant, a creative way to get people to tune in and eventually see who's going to break the streak, because you know it's eventually going to be broken. But to have it happen here at WrestleMania 30, and 6 years later, Undertaker is still competing. It's insane. It's insane. But Brock Lesnar to beat the streak, Vince has justified it by saying that streaks are meant to be broken. He didn't have anything big planned for 30, so he needed to have something like this, something that of that magnitude, and that no one wants to give back to the business more than The Undertaker, more than Mark Calloway, as he said in Stone Cold's podcast a number of years ago. So he can justify it all he wants. I still don't believe it should have been broken. Even all these years later, it's been almost 6 years. Isn't that insane? Almost 6 years since that moment took place, and it still doesn't sit right with me. I'll never forget sitting there in my apartment looking at this happen. And I remember standing up going, what? And you're waiting for the referee to restart the match or for Vince to come down, somebody to come down to say that that's not right. No, this is not right. Restart the match, or something happened, or you kept waiting for some craziness to happen that would reverse the decision. And instead, we got silence. We got silence. And that was a brilliant move, because I think WWE wanted to hear the audience. They wanted to have that moment of just pure shock. No music, nothing. Just, What was the audible, invisible reactions of fans that had seen this streak for 21 years and 21 straight victories suddenly come to an end when no one thought it would? You see the reactions of people. I mean, it's just like crazy. It's crazy, the reactions of fans. And again, one of the moments I'd recommend you go back and listen to and watch as well. I mean, I just that one clip still made me go, what the hell? Was it the worst decision in wrestling history? No, I don't think it was. But certainly one of the ones that was shocking and never thought we'd see. And maybe that's why Vince did it. Alrighty, the next one here, I believe this is what, number four, was the launch of the WWE Network, right? This was a game changer. This happened on February 24th, 2014, and was right before WrestleMania 30. And I remember watching Stephanie McMahon make the announcement and saying, this is going to be awesome. And it was priced at $9.99 a month. And saying that, well, we were already paying $50 for WrestleMania, what the hell is another, you know, just $10 a month? But I know that performers, wrestlers backstage were concerned, saying, is this going to cut into our paycheck, considering that pay-per-views are $30-$40 a piece, and that the some people only order WrestleMania, and that's $60. How are the payouts going to work? And Vince didn't really have an answer. The answer really is volume and getting those who may not have purchased a pay-per-view during the year to realize the value of, wait, for $10 a month, I can get every pay-per-view and it's not going to be a $40 charge to my cable bill every month. And I get access to not just every pay-per-view, but the entire Raw library, SmackDown library, documentaries, exclusives, 365, Table for Three, all these things that have obviously come along later. But just everything. I mean, the value is insane. I mean, I'm not promoting the WWE Network as if I'm getting a cut of it, right? But I'm giving you my honest opinion that I will gladly give $9.99 a month for what I get back in value for the network. Could the app be better on iPhone? Yeah, the app on iPhone is still kind of, it's better. But it was a game changer. It was a game changer. For the vehicle, the platform in which they present content. And it really just, I think, skyrocketed the amount of content you have access to. Because prior to that, what were we all using? Prior to the WWE Network, think back to that time. We used what? YouTube? I used YouTube. I still use YouTube. Other torrent sites or video sharing sites. I'd use DVDs. I did not use VHS. I don't even know if I have VHS anymore. But I did use, what was that called? FrostWire, LimeWire, when I could download wrestling clips. I remember all that prior to that. And yes, when the pay-per-view would come along, if it was big enough, I would typically order the big four: WrestleMania, Survivor Series, Rumble, and SummerSlam. Those were really the ones that I would invest my money in. And now with $9.99 a month, it really is a huge, huge. I know this sounds like an infomercial for WWE Network. It's not. It's just my honest opinion about it. And it's a huge game changer. And it really shook up the entire way that WWE presents content. And it's, I think, a huge game changer. I don't know. So that was a huge moment as well. You know, it wasn't an actual wrestling moment, but massive, massive way. And also how they count ratings, I think, as well. Yes, Raw isn't streamed live on the network, but a lot of people watch Raw on delay, which then happens through Hulu. So anyway, streaming has just changed the game completely. And WWE got involved in that in February of 2014. All right, the WWE Performance Center is number five here. This is a big deal in that, like the WWE Network, it's not an in-ring moment, but it changed the game of in a very important way of how WWE gets their talent. With WCW being purchased in 2001, with very little competition. You can't count TNA, all right? Ring of Honor doesn't count. New Japan doesn't count. None of that, unfortunately, counts as true competition. So outside of those small pools of talent availability, there wasn't anybody that or any place you could go to really understand the WWE way of their version of professional wrestling, and there wasn't a talent pool out there that you could pull from. And it was just a great way that happened. Again, this happened on, it opened on July 11th, 2013. And it was very expensive for WWE at first, a hell of an investment. But for WWE, for Triple H to take that by the horns and spearhead this project to a point where now 5 years removed, or really, well, 7 years, almost 7 years since WWE opened that, it has become the truth third brand. NXT has. Again, the Performance Center is separate from NXT, but that's where you would presumably go, is from the training, the Performance Center, to NXT, to the main roster. That was just the path in which stars would take. And now it's starting to change a bit, where stars don't want to leave NXT for the fear that they'll get lost in the shuffle. It's a different schedule on the main roster. And they want to be the biggest fish in a small pond in NXT. And that, like Tommaso Ciampa. And it's been documented by Triple H that Tommaso doesn't want to leave NXT. And I respect that. Again, the training center opened on July 11th, 2013, and really was extremely instrumental in developing new talent, getting talent used to the way WWE produces their shows, what cameras to look at, how aesthetically they look on camera. There's a promo room. There's, what, four or five rings in the facility, weights, cardio. I mean, you name it, everything that you need to, all the tools possible to be a star, are at your disposal. And it changed the game. It was a brilliant idea that Triple H spearheaded, and it worked, and it continues to work. And it is a proven system now for WWE to have these stars really start there. Yes, they're brought in from maybe wrestling promotions overseas, or even in Mexico, or independents throughout the United States. And yes, even maybe even AEW at some point will be a place WWE looks to possibly bring in a big talent. I mean, that's not something I think we should sneeze at, because eventually it could be WCW versus WWE in the long run. You know, where it's, they maybe get bigger than NXT and can maybe compete with the ratings of Raw and SmackDown. Again, we're talking down the line, but think about that, right? So the training center is a huge, huge deal, And it's just it brilliant. So, all right, number six, the debut of The Shield at Survivor Series 2012. They attacked Ryback and Cena. It allowed CM Punk to get the win here, if you remember. I remember how cool it was. I mean, they were like the pack of wolves, as they were really labeled as. And having Ambrose and Rollins and Reigns, they just felt different. Their promos backstage, holding the camera, everything felt different and new about them. They were brought up, and I know CM Punk takes credit for putting The Shield together. Originally, he wanted Ambrose, Rollins, and Chris Hero. He got Roman Reigns, and certainly that's worked out for Reigns. But it was a moment that I remember going, what the hell? Kind of in the way that the Nexus did, except the Nexus was a bigger group that didn't have as much of an identity individually. It was just kind of a bunch of bodies from NXT, whereas these were three defined guys that we got to know over the next couple of years before Rollins did his infamous and extremely successful heel turn to join the Authority. But this was a moment, because this Shield is, this group is iconic in the annals of wrestling factions, and the guys that they've taken out. They took out The Rock. They took out The Undertaker. They've taken out CM Punk. Just, you go on and on, and they had some really, really big moments. And it's, again, this is a moment that I know I'll never forget. And hey, while we're at it, why not listen to some audio here as I pull it up on my computing machine. So take a listen.
Hey, what in the world? What is this? What is this? These three guys just came rushing through the crowd.
Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins.
Roman Reigns.
No way!
What is going on?
Welcome to the Shield of Justice.
So, of course, that was a bit of a recap, but it was a huge moment and one that clearly just changed the lives of all three guys and really the business, because how many combinations of these three have we seen as far as even fighting amongst themselves, all three holding championships, tag team championships, their feuds with John Cena. I mean, it really just changed the game, and it, I think, was the first true showing of what NXT could provide us. It was the first successful big bring up for three guys. And yeah, the Nexus was first, but they're kind of forgotten. I mean, you don't remember anybody but Wade Barrett. And of course, you had The Fiend actually come out of it. Bray Wyatt came out of it. You had Michael McGillicuddy come out of it. Curtis Axel, you had guys come out that are still kind of here, right? Obviously Bray Wyatt being the biggest, most successful. But it was really these three guys that I think truly were the example of what NXT could provide us. So, all right, moving down the line here. Number seven, I hope I counted that right. Brock Lesnar's return in 2012. Now, prior to this, we have to remember, Brock Lesnar was last seen in WWE in 2004 after having, which is really widely believed, one of the worst WrestleMania matches of all time in Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg at WrestleMania 20. I've said that so many times that it's starting to hurt now. But that was the last time that we saw Brock Lesnar in a WWE ring. And to have him come back 8 years later, and it was the night after The Rock was defeated by, John Cena was defeated by The Rock. And so John Cena is in the middle of the ring. And, why don't we just take a listen to what happened? Brock goes on to F5 John Cena. The fans love it. They lose their minds. It was a great moment. And even seeing that back, it reminds you just how big of a deal Brock is. And we may say, oh, we're tired of seeing him. He's an absentee champion. The fact of the matter is, I don't care what you think about him, like him, hate him, in between, indifferent. The fact is that he is the biggest star WWE has right now. And name somebody bigger. Roman Reigns? I don't think so. John Cena? Not in the game anymore. And I would argue Brock Lesnar's bigger than John Cena. There's just nobody bigger. Nobody. And that's a damn fact. So, yes, and by the way, Brock Lesnar's back on Monday Night Raw this coming Monday. As I predicted, the first Monday Night Raw of the new year, you'll see big stars come back as they are now. And so, but again, this moment was huge because it not only was the return of Brock Lesnar, And now we're, my God, freaking 8 years since that moment. But it was also the turning point of John Cena's career for that year, going on a downward spiral. He lost to The Rock. He lost to Brock in his program here. And it was a well-documented year for John Cena that was not one of his best in terms of a professional standpoint. But it was a huge moment, one that I was shocked in seeing after Brock left on very miserable terms 8 years earlier. You know, and having such success in the UFC, I didn't think he'd come back. And yes, he has had fights in the UFC since then, no question. And he has won against Mark Hunt, very with an asterisk, of course, right? Or asterisk. Is it asterisk or asterisk? I don't know. See, now I'm getting tongue-tied. But it was a huge moment, and I loved it. I love sharing this audio because it gets me all pumped up. All right, we're on to number eight. What is the what's number eight here? I would say number eight is The Rock returning to WWE, and this happened also in 2011, and this was a huge moment too, because as Brock Lesnar's return was big in 2012, I think The Rock's return was also equally big, because many of us believed that The Rock was probably done. He had said it in many different platforms after he was in the, you know, finding success and big success in Hollywood, that he was done with wrestling. And, you know, have him come back and have him face John Cena. Notice a theme here. John Cena is like the face of WWE, and you have Brock come back to beat him and Rock come back to beat him. Cool deal, right? But for The Rock to come back and to have him do what he did with John Cena and have him come back in a way that was explosive on Valentine's Day, I remember that. Again, I was out on a date and I missed it. It was a big moment to have The Rock come back as the host of WrestleMania. He was the host of WrestleMania 27. He ended up costing John Cena the WWE Championship to have The Miz retain the WWE Championship in the main event of WrestleMania and give him rock bottom. And then it set up a match for a year-long build at WrestleMania 28. The Rock goes on to win, and then The Rock becomes WWE Champion during that year and then does the favors for John Cena, allowing John Cena to... The Rock does the favors for Cena at WrestleMania 29, and John Cena wins the championship. Rock actually got injured during the match and tore a hamstring, and then Cena becomes champion. So it was a give-and-take two-year-long program, and I think it was beneficial for both guys. It was a huge deal. The Rock coming back the way he did, I think, was explosive. Great promo when he first came back, and it was in L.A., the Staples Center. I'll never forget it. And also having John Cena carve out The Rock pretty bad, carved up The Rock in terms of a promo ability. I mean, he spanked The Rock, and I hate to say that, but John Cena spanked The Rock when it came to promos. He just did. And, John Cena proves that he is the master of the mic. It's just the way it is, which is a compliment to him, as much as I'm a Rock fan and you thought The Rock was going to come back and just chew up John Cena and spit about on the mic, we got a different result. And The Rock proved he can still go. I think WrestleMania 28 was a better match than 29, but it certainly showed that The Rock still had it and is in phenomenal shape, and was a great business for the company. Put more value back in the brand in terms of notoriety, in terms of news outlets talking about The Rock's return. I mean, it was just great publicity. I think it helped the business as a whole in a time that didn't really have a lot of top stars other than John Cena. It was a big deal. And then Brock obviously returns in 2012, as I just discussed. So, again, The Rock's return, huge here. And moving on. All right. Number nine was, CM Punk's pipe bomb promo. And that happened on June 27th, 2011 in Vegas, after Punk had just finished attacking John Cena when he sat down on the stage and proceeded to deliver one of the greatest worked shoot promos of all time. And it was just nothing short of miraculous, game-changing. It went from this era of, you know, we don't know who the next top guy is to we know who our top guy is. And it was just brilliant. And, well, let's just take a listen to some of it.
I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company. And I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. That's right, I'm a Paul Heyman guy. You know who else was a Paul Heyman guy? Brock Lesnar. And he split, just like I'm splitting, but the biggest difference between me and Brock is I'm going to leave with the WWE Championship. So many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me and the fact that day in and day out for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me. And yet, no matter how many times I prove it, I'm not on your lovely little collector cups. I'm not on the cover of the program. I'm barely promoted. I don't get to be in movies. I'm certainly not on any crappy show on the USA Network. I'm not on the poster of WrestleMania. I'm not in the signature that's produced at the start of the show.
I mean, just it's great stuff. I mean, I could watch that promo all day. It's just such a staple in the WWE in WWE history. It changed the game for how promos are delivered in an era that was very heavily scripted. It certainly changed the game big time. So we all know and love this promo, and it should be studied. It should be studied in classes, and it's brilliant. All righty, and that gets us to the number 10 moment here. And again, this is not a 1 to 10 list. This is not any kind of ranking system. This is just the 10 moments that I thought were big. And this is not the most big. This is not the biggest moment. This happens just to be number 10. And that was, at least to me, the Shawn Michaels retirement. And this took place in 2010 after WrestleMania 26 when The Undertaker defeated Shawn Michaels. And it was extremely significant because it marked the end of one of the greatest, if not the greatest, in-ring career of all time. And you could say Ric Flair is one of this extremely subjective, I understand. But in my eyes, I mean, I grew up watching Michaels and started in 97 as he just started getting into DX. And all through his retirement or forced retirement after the injury from The Undertaker, backdropping him on a casket. And then really coming full circle, coming back in 2002, which was supposed to be a one-off, and then really making it a career for another 8 years. And it was one of the best careers I've ever seen. I don't think we really fully, truly understand the significance of Shawn Michaels and the impact he had on future performers and the overall impact he's had on this industry. And all the great matches he's given us, everything. I mean, to me, the WrestleMania 25 match with The Undertaker may have been the best match I've ever seen. I don't say that lightly. It really may have been. It is a wrestling clinic. It is a clinic in psychology. It is everything you need a wrestling match to be, and it's paced correctly. It is paced correctly at 25. And yes, 26, of course, was a follow-up, which could never really follow up to the 25 match. And we're focusing on 25 or 26 because it's within 2010. If I go to 2009, obviously it doesn't count because it's not part of this decade. But again, 25 to me was the best match I've ever seen And it proves that you don't need today's style of 500 miles an hour to have a "this is awesome" chant. To me, "this is awesome" chants are actually a sign of a wrestling style that I'm still getting used to. It really exemplified what you can do when you have two stars in the ring that tell a story at a pace that is digestible and just understand in-ring psychology and have chemistry on top of it, otherworldly chemistry. But again, 26, when Shawn Michaels slapped The Undertaker at the very end of the match, and Undertaker signaled this is, you know, that the end is near. He tombstoned Shawn Michaels. His in-ring career is over. It was a huge moment, and as big as the Ric Flair retirement just a few years before that, with HBK retiring Flair at WrestleMania. What was it? WrestleMania 20? Oh, good grief! 24, it might have been. And it was a huge deal. And again, I'd recommend anybody go back to watch 26, and more importantly, really WrestleMania 25. I know it's in 2009, so I'm a year off, but I'd really, really recommend everyone go back and watch both of those. You talk about every, you know, just the storyline made sense. Everything made sense from a in-ring perspective. There's just nothing better. Nothing better when two professionals can go in there and tell a story that just grabs you by the heartstrings and everything, and just makes you forget about your life for the time that they're in the ring. Those are rare moments. Those moments don't happen very often anymore. Number one, because the pace is just too damn fast today. I my brain can't process what's happening, and it also lends itself to a lack of selling because everything is just hit react. I register it. I know that I got hit. I'll react to it, but there's no selling and showing of pain and struggle. It's very quick. It's got to be the next move, instead of just taking your damn time with telling the audience a story. And I'm not all for the, you know, Randy Orton obligatory 20-minute rear chin lock in the middle of the ring. I'm talking about just being able to tell a story and make things mean more. You have crazy things going on in the ring, ultra athletic things going on in the ring, and they mean next to nothing. They are as effective as a clothesline because everything is so fast paced that the opponent has to get up to take the next move and take the next move and take the next move, and the crazy reversals and oh my God and holy, you know, blank chance and this is awesome chance. And the athleticism is coming at the expense of selling, and selling is what the soul of professional wrestling is. And that to me is what is suffering today. And I'm still getting used to it. It's just a different brand of wrestling. You could say it's evolving, and that's fine. It is evolving into this new brand. I just don't feel as much emotion as I did back when the pacing was what it was. I'm not saying have a slow motion match. I'm just saying to present a match that you could tell a story that I'm not speed reading a book, you know, through. I am actually able to read and understand what's happening and go from A to B to C and make it make sense instead of A to Z to Q to L to M to, you know, O and back again. And that's the issue that I have with today's, quote, quality wrestling shows. Even AEW is guilty of this, and it's just the way the business has gone, and I get it. And I understand that if you don't, you know, present the audience with what they want, that you are falling behind the times and you're just not giving them what they want, which is not good from a business perspective. But I think there will become a time where the business goes back to the way it was, and what's old is new again. And I think the business will slow down. At least I hope it does, because to me, that is where true pro wrestling lives, where true storytelling lives, where true emotion lives, is in the pacing and in-ring psychology and not killing your bodies. And that's not the other thing I'm not even talking about is the risk that these guys are putting and gals are putting themselves through in today's, quote, quality wrestling style of extremely fast-paced, high-risk maneuvers is that it's just that. it's extremely high risk, and it's putting the lives of the people doing these maneuvers at a much higher risk because of the maneuvers of what they're doing on the top rope and everything else. It's putting the health of those performers at a level that it doesn't need to be. So I think that's the other part of this that people are forgetting. But nonetheless, guys, I hope you enjoyed my list of 10 things that were huge from the 2010s of WWE. Again, this is not a top 10 list, but you can rank them as you will. And I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff I forgot. And there, you know, of course, this is very subjective, but I want to thank you guys for listening. Again, NXT's coming, AEW review's coming, Ashley and I are coming this weekend for your weekend review. But I wanted to give you guys just a little quick rundown of the 2010s in WWE. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, head to my website at WWEpodcast.com. The video section will be filling up in the next couple of weeks with things, as well as on my Twitter at the WWE Podcast. You can also head over to Patreon at patreon.com/WWEpodcast for your ad-free version of this show and tons of other goodies, tons and tons of other stuff. If you don't like ads, that's your place to be. So, guys, again, thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of the show and your ratings and reviews. As always, I'll talk to you next time.